is United Tribes News Radio, Special Events Edition. From United Tribes Technical College in Bismarck, leadership begins here. North Dakota observes a day each fall to recognize the first people of the land that is now the state. It's called First Nations Day. It's celebrated on the Friday before the second Monday in the month of October. It's not a public holiday nor a day off. It's more like a day on to focus on the state's indigenous people, people native to this area. North Dakota was once all Indian land. Even the state's name is native. Every step you take in this state was once the domain of indigenous people. You might live in a community or on a street with a tribal name. The place names of lakes and rivers, hills and prairies, bluffs and woods echo the long presence of those who came first. But the descendants of those who succeeded in this land generations ago are largely invisible in society. Today, Native citizens, despite their perseverance and successes, often go unnoticed and underserved in modern life. North Dakota is fortunate to have within its borders five tribal nations: the Spirit Lake Tribe, the Standing Rock Tribe, the three affiliated tribes of the Mandan-Hidatsa-Arikara Nation, the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa, and a portion of the Sisseton-Wahpeton-Oyate in the extreme southeastern part of the state. First Nations Day has become a time to reflect on the history, culture, and present status of these tribes. It's been a time to examine the role of American Indian people now and in the future. And it's been a time to show respect and give thanks for Native people as part of the family that is North Dakota. In this program, some of the sounds of this special event. The North Dakota Legislature enacted First Nations Day into law in 2003. Lawmakers directed that the state's governor should issue a proclamation yearly to recognize the indigenous peoples of the state and their contributions to the state and nation. The North Dakota Indian Affairs Commission, created in 1949, is the state agency that coordinates First Nations Day with the help of tribal organizations, including United Tribes. An event is held at the state capitol to which the public is invited. Typically, state officials join with tribal leaders for a program that features talks, presentations, and music. The 2015 observance was held in the Russell Reed Auditorium at the North Dakota Heritage Center. The program featured talks by tribal leaders that were informal and personal. It was hosted by Indian Affairs Commission Executive Director Scott Davis.
Well, good morning, everybody. On behalf of Governor Dalrymple and Lieutenant Wrigley, it's an honor and humble to share a special day with everybody here today on First Nations Day to host in partnership with United Tribes Technical College and also the community of Bismarck Mandan Native American communities in celebrating First Nations Day. I can probably safely speak on behalf of most Native Americans, if not all Native Americans, every day is First Nations Day to all of us here as Native Americans in this room. But today is just a more special day. It's more pronounced. It's proclaimed by the governor, and we'll share that later on too. But it's certainly a special day for many reasons. But really, today is more about you folks and giving some thoughts and some reflections about what this day means to you as a person, as a tribal member, as a family member, community member too. So I just really encourage you to give some thoughts about that today. So with that, first up on the agenda, we have Miss Kimberly Blevins. She is crowned Miss AHEC, a young lady here that certainly has an up-and-coming leader, and she's going to share a few words and remarks regarding First Nations Day. So please welcome Miss Kimberly Blevins.
Thank you, Scott, for that introduction. Tribal leaders, distinguished guests, and elders. Nawa, Heisha, Adisht. Hello, good morning. I am a member of the Mandan-Hidatsa Saanich Nation and a descendant of the Hunkpapa Sioux. I am a member of the Prairie Chicken Clan. My given name by my great-grandmother Rose Crows Flies High is Sunlight Woman. I am the reigning Miss AHEC and am currently studying pre-environmental engineering at United Tribes Technical College. As we celebrate First Nations Day, we look to the reason that brought us here today. First Nations Day proclamation was signed by our former governor, John Hoven, over 10 years ago. It was a day in which North Dakota recognizes and celebrates the First Nations who shaped the history and culture of their great nation. The five tribal nations have a long-standing relationship with the state of North Dakota. Tribal leaders have served in the state legislature, numerous state offices and committees. We want to applaud them for their many contributions that continue to bridge the gap. As we reflect on the meeting of today, I hope that this is not only a short acknowledgement of the impact of First Nations contributions to the state of North Dakota, but one that ignites everyone to reflect on this for generations ahead. As every day, we should continue to seek justice, equality, and the preservation of liberty for all tribal nations. Thank you.
This is Chairman Richard McLeod from Turtle Mountain.
6 weeks after I started in the Postal Service, I was asked to go OIC, Officer in Charge, another post office, and they said, we'll put you in there for 6 weeks. 6 months later, I told them, I'm so bored in this little office, you got to get me out of here. So I went back to my Rolla, North Dakota post office. Postal Service started seeing what I was capable of doing and started promoting me all over. By the time I became postmaster, I had OIC Rugby, North Dakota, Harvey, North Dakota, Williston, North Dakota. But my goal was to be the postmaster in my hometown of Belcourt, North Dakota. 10 years into my career and being shipped all over to help create a career for myself, I was promoted to the postmaster in Belcourt. Throughout my 33 years in the Postal Service, when I retired in September of 2012, I was trying to retire in July, and the Postal Service had that option of keeping us 3 months when we request our retirement date, and they did. They didn't let me go until September 30th. When I ended my career within the Postal Service, I was the most decorated postal employee the Postal Service had. I won every award the Postal Service gave out, from diversity to, and we used to call it the Benjamin Franklin, or the Eagle Award, which they renamed to the Benjamin Franklin. 2007, I got nominated for this Eagle Award. But when they were describing this person, and I was sitting with some other postmasters, of course they had big screens like this, and our winner is, when the Postmaster General was talking, and I turned to look, I'm on the screen, and it didn't click right away, and I was like, whoa, that's me. And it was because I started a program within the Postal Service, which I called the GIST program, Greet, Inquire, Suggest, and Thank. I would go around and teach postal employees on how to treat your customers, because the customers is your business. I remember first time I did that, and I was asked to speak, and I was thinking, how can I keep their attention? How can I get up there and talk without sounding like Charlie Brown's teacher? Wah, 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 wah. That morning, I was to speak at 11 a.m., and they had a podium, and what I had, I brought my headdress with me, and I hid it underneath the podium, and when it was my turn to speak, I got up and I started talking, and then I bent down and I put my headdress on, and everybody went, whoa. I don't know if they heard me or were just looking at me, but I had everybody's attention anyway, and I ended up doing one here on South Dakota, and the Postmaster General was there, and he loved my presentation on the GIST and what I was doing. And I was laughing after that meeting, because usually everybody stands in line to take a picture with the Postmaster General. Well, everybody was standing in line, including the Postmaster General, to take a picture with me in my headdress.
This is Chairwoman Myra Pearson, Spirit Lake.
I've been in and out of politics since 1996, when I first got elected. But all in all, you know, we always wanted good things for our homes, our reservations. I come from the little reservation in the center of North Dakota, you know. I want to talk a little bit about our Native youth. We all understand that the youth, you know, I believe that they're an investment that, you know, we're never going to go wrong with. And the youth on our reservation, you know, they're faced with a lot of things. You know, they say we live in poverty. Well, yeah, it's if we want to live in poverty, but, you know, sure, times are hard. But at the same time, you know, we need to battle some of these demons that we have within our reservations. A lot of them are alcohol and drugs. But you know who's identifying that and who's coming forward are the youth on our reservation. Whatever I have to do, you know, I'm going to stand up for these youth, and I'm going to do as much as I could to make darn sure that they are, you know, they're going to be safe and they're going to get what they want. Because without them, our reservations aren't going to have a future. So we've done some things, you know, as far as like restricting their money that they receive when they turn 18 years old. You know, they can't get that unless they graduate. And that's one way of at least looking at it, that, you know, they're going to get somewhat of an education. We've had some kids come in and tell us, you know, well, I'm glad you guys did that, because that's our money. You darn right that's your money. And not only that, you know, I said there's also rewards. You got kids that graduate 16, 17 years of age. And, you know, so when they graduate again, they can get their, you know, the money that the tribe has put away and saved for them. There's other things I know that they, you know, they've come forward and they wanted to work with. And here at the summit, our students identified the economy in itself, I guess. And they didn't, they didn't ask for money to do anything, but they had steps that they wanted to follow in order to get to where they wanted to be. And I was kind of surprised at that because I don't even hear that from some of the adults, you know, at home. But these kids aren't taking notice. And I think, you know, we need to, each of us on our reservations need to listen to our children. My mother always told me, she said, those kids know more than you do. You think you're smart, but the kids are smarter than you. And I believe that, you know, I believe the kids see things that we don't realize or we don't, you know, we don't acknowledge. These kids do. And you know, that's that I'm going to kind of fall back here and tell you, you know, I've been in and out of politics since 96 when I first ran for the chairman. But I always remember the words that my grandpa, you know, told me. And in Indian, he told me this in Dakota, that he said, you always do right by the people. Treat them good. No matter who they are, treat them good and treat, you know, don't be mean to them. Don't do things wrong, because if you ever start doing things wrong and crooked, he said, you're going to walk around in the dark the rest of your life crying, and you're going to be bumping into things. And I always remember these things, you know, because he said these in the native language. And I was, to myself, I was thinking, oh, I don't want to be in the dark crying all the time. You know, I also cried and went to my mother, and I told her, I said, what the heck did I get myself into? I didn't realize politics was that bad. But, you know, like I said, I've learned to overcome a lot of, you know, you get, as the rest of these chairmen can probably tell you, you get a lot of, you know, you get a lot of heat from the people. But you have to try and be fair and you know, with everyone out there. You can't always satisfy everyone. That's the hard part, you know, but you have to be fair. And I think if you're fair and you're honest, it makes your job that much easier. You get a little slap once in a while, but, you know, you learn to brush those things off. Today I have a council of four district members, Nancy and myself. And I'm very proud and honored to say that, you know, these council, I know they're young and everything, but they're always in attendance, and they're always there to help one another. And Nancy's always hollering bingo, because we always have a full, you know, a full quorum all the time. And it's good, because then, you know, each of the districts get their equal, you know, representation on issues.
This is former Chairman Bruce Renville, Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate.
Good morning, everybody. Let me start with, I think some of you are wondering why the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate, with headquarters in South Dakota, how are they a part of the United Tribes of North Dakota? Well, part of our reservation extends into North Dakota, and we have a gaming operation on our North Dakota property, and that's in the way down southeastern part of North Dakota. But our headquarters is in Sisseton, South Dakota, and we have 13,000 members. 6,000 members live on the reservation, and we are in a brand new office building. We have 110,000 square feet administrative building, and it would be my pleasure to invite the audience to come and see our building. It's just wonderful. We had programs from 10 separate locations move into that building. So we were, prior to that, we were all over the place, you know, and so we had the miscommunication problems. Once we moved into that building, the employee morale and all the services improved. You know, like I say, I invite you to take a look at our facility, talk about some of our tribal programs. We just had some officials from Washington, D.C., in the Department of Veteran Affairs came and visited, and they reaffirm their commitment to build a veteran cemetery for us. That cemetery, we estimate the cost to be several million dollars. So we're very excited about having our own cemetery for our Native vets, because tribal members are very patriotic, and history proves that. You know, the Native vets serve at a higher rate than any other ethnic group in the country. Our little tribe, we have over 1,500 vets, so we want to honor them by providing a cemetery for them and their families. And so we're very proud of that. We had a huge meeting of over 100 housing people from this whole area. And those 100 people are the ones that make housing opportunities happen. This particular session that we had focused on home ownership. And home ownership on a reservation is kind of a unique thing. A lot of people would prefer to rent and not take advantages of owning a home. So we last spring got a grant, a huge grant from another tribe of $500,000. And we showed that by leveraging this resource that we got of $500,000, we're going to be able to provide about $1.5 million in new homes to tribal members. That also includes building partnerships. Previous administrations at my tribe were very mistrustful of state government. They missed so many opportunities. We got into office in January. One of the first things we did was open the doors to those kinds of opportunities, not only the state government, but other agencies that were willing to offer their services to us that previously we turned our backs on. And what a mistake that has been. So we've had all of our congressional people come and visit. They spend the whole day visiting us. They see what we have. They see what we have to offer. All the state agencies have come and talked to us and showed us that we can trust them. We can believe in what they say, what they want to do, and how they want to work with us. I think we're ready to move forward, really seriously. There's so many issues that we need to deal with. Drugs being a major problem. We have a serious need for housing. We have a need for about 600 homes. You know, we have a lot of work to do. We don't have time for petty politics. That just distracts everybody from doing what we need to do, the real hard work, and making the real tough decisions. So I thank you for the opportunity to join everybody today in acknowledging today as First Nations Day in North Dakota. I think it needs to happen in all states. It's a great thing. It's a great thing. I think you need to take this message out to the local levels, the local communities, and share the success that the tribes have experienced over the years in North Dakota.
This is Councilman Fred Fox, 3 Affiliated Tribes.
It's an honor to be here, and it's an honor to have First Nations here in the state of North Dakota and to honor the reservations and the tribes that are a part of North Dakota. My name is Fred Fox. I'm a tribal representative on the Tribal Business Council of the 3 Affiliated Tribes. I've been on the council this term here for 3 years. I was the vice chairman my first 2 years on the council, and I represent Whiteshield segment. I'm a veteran of the United States Navy, and when we join, you know, all of a sudden. We don't just take time and think things out, you know. I went to the recruiter the day before, and I was in the bus going to Fargo 2 days later. My mom and dad were wondering where I was for a couple days, and I was on the road to, you know, heading to Fargo to enlist in the Navy. So it was something that I would wanted to do. My father was in the military, and, you know, all of my grandfathers, my uncles, and so it was something that it needed to be done. I'm a graduate of Minot State University. Went there specifically for geology. I wanted to go there kind of just to study in oil and gas and different things, and they told me, because we've had oil and gas opportunities at Fort Berthold back in the 80s and the 90s, and my instructors told me, oh, they'll never going to be oil and gas in Fort Berthold. And so I said, oh, yeah, no, you know, that was back in the 90s when I was going to college. And I started working for the tribe, and back in 2006 as a natural resource director, administrator, then energy director, and all of a sudden oil and gas start popping up, and we got busy. And Scott had said I was in the mix of things, and it really got busy. And a lot of these opportunities have brought a lot of revenue to the three affiliate tribes, has brought a lot of economic development, has brought a lot of jobs. But on the other hand, has brought a lot of negative things to our tribe, you know, that our tribal business council has to take care of. A lot of things as crime, drugs. It's a thing that we don't want to put our head down to. Even, you know, I'm the chairman of our judicial committee, and I got a call late last night, you know, and I was sleeping, and all of a sudden, you know, we get a call from our justice center saying we can't take any more inmates anymore. Our jail is overloaded, overflowing, you know. Mm-hmm. So these things are happening back in Fort Berthold because of the crime and drugs that have been brought in, and it's escalating to another level. One of the things that we have to go forward and move forward with, we have agreements with the state of North Dakota on our tax agreements and different things that we have for oil and gas. The state of North Dakota has probably received $1 billion from the Fort Berthold Reservation just in tax money. That should have went to Fort Berthold, but we split the tax 50-50. And so these are the things that we're trying to work with the state of North Dakota for, because we had the city of Newtown, not the tribe, the city of Newtown came in front of our council meeting last night and said they would like $1 million for a fire truck, you know, but we cannot extend our help to the city of Newtown. We're trying to take care of the three affiliated tribes, law enforcement, fire department, schools, everything else. You know, we're building a $30 million road in Newtown that is coming right from the three affiliated tribes revenue. These roads have to be built, and we've spent probably $30 to $50 million a year just on roads, just to try to make sure the roads are safe for our kids and our elders. A lot of things has happened, and it's pretty busy. We want to make things happen. We want to make things good. One of the things that we're doing in my segment and the district that I live in the Whiteshield segment, is we're building a $17 million school. The school was built, I think it was 1957 it was built. That was when the school first built. I went to school there all my life, and my uncles have went there. My brothers, my sisters, everybody I've known have went to school there, and we've never had a school since then. And it was one of my goals. I said, I'm going to build a new school here in Whiteshield, you know, for the people here. And right now we're halfway done with it. And last night we did a check to get going on it. So it's a reality. Reality for our children there in Whiteshield. The other things that we're doing here in Fort Berthold Reservation is we're building a law enforcement, a justice center expansion. What has happening here in Fort Berthold was a boom that we need to take care of. We are currently putting forth a $25 million expansion to our court system and our justice center. One of the opportunities that we've seen that we need to take care of is our drug problem that we have at back home. We have this program called the Warriors of the 21st Century, and what we do with the program is we try to rehabilitate the drug users from our reservation. They have continue a job if it's, say, for instance, if it's at Walmart, or if it's here in Bismarck like Walmart, or back home at the grocery store. We want to make sure that they continue on their road to recovery. So we make sure that whatever they make, if they make $10, we're going to match that $10. And then they make $20 as long as they continue that road. And then we continually giving them drug tests every month. They have to have a certain amount of sessions they go to. So it's a program that we've seen work for the past year, and it's going to be continuing. But the other things that we're doing is we're doing a drug treatment center. It's a $30 million drug treatment center. We're working on looking to have it here in Bismarck. And everybody always wonders, why are we going to have it in Bismarck? Well, we got probably about 800 tribal members from the three affiliated tribes that live here in Bismarck. Putting it in Bismarck is would grab a lot of the resources that we need of the people that can work there, the professionals that we need in the drug facility, the drug treatment center. It has become a problem. We can't take care of the drug addicts in our law enforcement center. We don't have the equipment. We don't have the training. So that's one of the things that we want to pursue here in Bismarck is the drug treatment center. We're working probably work with the city of Bismarck and the state of North Dakota. We've already mentioned had meetings with Senator Heitkamp on seeing how O&M funding can come from the government to take care of some of the costs for the drugs treatment facility. So those are the things that come along with what's happening in Fort Berthold. The good things that are being done, like I said, is we're building a school. We have a $45 million event center that's part of the Fort Bears Casino. The other opportunities that we see in Fort Berthold is trying to create is the tourism with the Lakes of Kahkahuia. Right now, we're working closely with the state and trying to create a partnership and to see how we can get that lakeshore back. And I know it's one of the things that we don't know, how we can work together in developing that relationship to make sure that these lakeshores are returned from the Lakes Kahkahuia, our original homelands that our ancestors lived. But with that, I want to thank everybody for coming. I want to thank Scott. I want to thank the governor and the rest of the tribal leaders. So with that, thank you.
United Tribes Technical College President, Dr. Russ McDonald.
I'm a doc LP. Chante was the U.A. Nape to use Apado. Matajoro Dakota Mak Apado. Russ McDonald was each of Mak Apado. I shake all of your hands with a good heart this morning. Say hello to all my friends and relatives. I want to thank you for being here today. Thank all of you for being here today, especially our Kichita and our dignitaries, our tribal leaders. And as we hear the different leaders share this morning, we recognize the importance of spirituality in regard to our culture and our language and how that is a foundation for our nations and how that should be incorporated into the constitutions and the ordinances and bylaws that we have for all of our peoples. So we look to these things for guidance today. We look at our historical aspect of our people, and there's a time when everyone knew what their roles were as men and women, as uncles, as aunties, grandparents, and some of the assimilation practices that happened to our people from at the federal level resulted in the loss of those cultures, loss of a way of life that has continued to impact us today. So we hear that the issues of poverty, confusion among our people in regard to our culture, thinking that culture of poverty is part of our culture. And we know that that's not the case. So it's imperative and it's very important to our people, to our nations, to our tribal colleges, to our educational systems to ensure that our people educate not only our non-native relatives, but also our own people. And some culture or some families, Teoshpawe extended families, have been champions for that, for keeping that alive. And so we look to them today to continue to help us. We look to our elders to continue to help us to try and bring back our way of life and to piece that back together in a contemporary society. So we looked, in the past we looked at who policed our camps, who created our safe community for us. It was our Kichita, those that who were the warriors for our people. And today, in modern times, we have law enforcement here today that we appreciate here in Bismarck. I have been living here in Bismarck now for close to a year. I see the differences from our reservation community to what I see here in Bismarck. What I see is a presence of law enforcement at all times here in Bismarck. And I did not see that at home. So we look back to the federal government in regard to their trust responsibilities for us as tribal nations, the trust responsibilities that were affirmed through treaties, contracts with our nations. And we look to them to fulfill those trust responsibilities to our people so that we can have a presence of law enforcement with our communities at the same that Bismarck has. I feel safe here. I know at United Tribes, it's like a small Indian country piece right here in the middle of Bismarck. And the city of Bismarck, Burley County, they work interactively with our security department, safety and security office, and they're there. They're there right now. It's not like at home, at the same time, there's challenges there for law enforcement at home. Is that there's a 248,000 acre reservation, and there's only one, a lot of times, only one law enforcement officer on duty, and he's got to patrol that whole res. And they got a call on this side of the reservation, and they can't leave that call until it's closed out. So if they get a call on the other side of the reservation, they got to close that out. Then they take off, head across the reservation to the other call on the other side. We see tribal governments today from almost all of our nations here in North Dakota banning those that are selling drugs.
And I think that's an important step with the lack of law enforcement in order to create these safe environments. And what we're seeing, I think, is what's happening here is a result of constitutions that were set in play back in 1934. And so we're starting to see in, within our contemporary society of the need for those changes that need to occur for our people today. So what we're seeing in regard to the recalls and then seeing what's happening is really a transitional piece. These are growing pains. These are things that we have to go through in order to make things better. So we rely on our spirituality to help us to do that. And we try to bring back our culture and how these things are done so that we can come together and continue to make a strong nation. So we make full circle back from where we start, where we should start in regard to our culture and spirituality, and do these things in regard to what's needed in our community, and then come back to that. And it's continue. It's continuous. It's ongoing. You know, so we joke a little bit today about, you know, some serious things. But I think the other part of it is that we need to laugh. We need to have humor. We need to enjoy this life that we're having. And we have little challenges and frustrations that we experience on a daily basis, and sometimes on maybe a little more than that. But for the most part, we're moving ahead. We're moving in a positive direction. And whatever happens with the tribes, if we seek that, that if we focus in on those that are in most need, that have the most disparities, most poverty within our population, if we raise them, we raise the entire society. I think it's imperative to the state of North Dakota, it's imperative to our federal partners that we continue to assist our tribal nations to move our nations ahead. So thank you for being here. Thank you for this your time and for listening to me today. Aho, matakia.
You heard from North Dakota tribal leaders during the 2015 observance of North Dakota First Nations Day. That was United Tribes President Russ McDonald, preceded by Councilman Fred Fox from three affiliated tribes, former Chairman Bruce Renville of Sisseton-Wahpeton, Chairwoman Myra Pearson from Spirit Lake, and Chairman Richard McLeod from Turtle Mountain. North Dakota First Nations Day, observed annually in October. Native people far prefer the recognition of this day and the national observance of Native American Heritage Awareness Month in November than that of Columbus Day. Native people have long protested Columbus Day as a national holiday. As a First Nations Day presenter once said, "There's little for us to celebrate about a lost sailor who washed up in the Caribbean and began the centuries-long looting of Turtle Island." Here's another North Dakota First Nations Day presentation. This is a keynote from Gerard Baker, a member of the MHA Nation. Baker had a distinguished career as a cultural interpreter, spokesperson, and superintendent in the National Park Service at Little Bighorn, or Greasy Grass, in Montana, and Mount Rushmore in South Dakota.
Thank you very much, Governor, and all the other dignitaries up here, the singers, very good job. And I'd also like to greet all my relatives that are here, my close relatives that came to see, which makes me really nervous. But I also want to thank especially the young people that are here. I am very, very proud of the fact that you're here. I'm very proud of the fact that your Kenai tribe sent you here on this very historic day as far as I'm concerned. You know, us Indian people have been here since time immemorial, has been said many times. And we have, if you will, managed this area before it was a Dakota territory, before it was a state of North Dakota. And we've had some very good areas where we have dealt with our visitors. All the tribes that are here, and I'm very proud of the fact to see their flags here represented also with the United States flag in the state of North Dakota. To understand that years ago, before the coming of the Anglo, before the coming of the white man, we ran this state, was now the state of North Dakota. We had a trading program going here that was the best in the country, as far as I'm concerned. We based out of the area about 50 miles north of here called Knife River. And at that time, we had the homeland in this area of the Mandans. And from a historical standpoint, oral history standpoint, we know we had two bands there and also five bands of Hidatsa, and later on joined by the Rikara of the Skidit Pawnee Nations. One thing I want these young people to understand is that we ran our business. We had leaders. We knew everything there was to know, if you will, about this part of the world. These young children that are here today need to understand that at one time we had the best, and still do as far as I'm concerned, had the best mathematicians, had the best people who knew the climate, the astrology, all these different things that we had to know to organize, to live, to survive. We had a lot of other tribes come into the area that would trade with us when we first started. The tribes are now a part of our state. and have been for a long time. If you look at this First Nations Day proclamation, it is right up our alley, folks. I really believe that. It's right up our alley because we do continue to play a vital role in this state, and we will continue to play a more vital role to this state. As I have a habit of doing, I always challenge, especially young people, rather than ask for things, now we have the opportunity. The doors are open, guys and ladies. The doors are open so you can walk through those, and one of these days, you can be running the state. You can be the governor. You can be the senators. You can be the representatives, the educators. It's something we have to understand. We did that before. We need to do it again. Right now, with the tribal governments going in this state, we've come a long ways. From where I was at with the National Park Service, I worked all over the United States and also in Alaska and overseas a little bit with the Park Service. And one thing we have to understand, I believe, is that we have an opportunity, especially young Indian people that are here today, we have an opportunity to be the warriors that we once were. At one time, we survived. We survived by family. And we still need to do that. There is a lesson here, I believe, in North Dakota. North Dakota has been a backbone of this nation, has always been the backbone of this nation, and the leader in many things. In the past, historically, we're the ones that greeted all of our visitors, our Indian people. Sometimes we greeted them with a handshake. Sometimes we greeted them with an arrow. But we still greeted them. One of the first ones that we know about, of course, were Pierre Lavendre and his sons coming up and documenting the Mandan country and the Mandan villages. They talked about the challenges, if you will, at that time. They also talked about our societies. If you go back to all of our tribes in what is now North Dakota, if we go back to all of our tribes, we had extremely sophisticated societies, extremely sophisticated clans, and extremely sophisticated education system, where you start learning the day you were born, basically. And you quit learning the day you left this world. And that's something we have to get back to today. As you said, this proclamation opens up a lot of doors. It opens up the doors for continuing education, but again, we mentioned education. Let's look at two worlds of education. As we know, yes, the way to survive today is by academics. We also by to survive today is knowing who you are, especially as American Indians and the rest of the North Dakota states, who you are as cultural beings as well. As I always tell people when I tell my story, I grew up on the western side of the reservation in Fort Berthold. And outside of our reservation, outside of our back pasture fence, was a group of Norwegians. So I got to grow up in two different areas, if you will. I used to cowboy on one side of the reservation, and my dad would send me outside to cowboy with the Norwegians. So I got to learn some really good cuss words, which I won't say here. I do also know that every spring I tell people that for some reason when I was very young, my dad used to help us move that reservation fence about 3 feet. So we have a really big ranch now, by the way. But again, so what I learned a long time ago through my father and mother and through all of our relatives, because we had a really, really extended family and still do. It comes from our relatives that we had to become warriors again. And I challenge you that again, young people that are here, you have to become warriors again. And a warrior is this. A warrior never runs away from his enemies. A warrior never says, I can't do this and run away. A warrior takes on his enemies. And that's one thing that I learned in my time with the National Park Service, that we have a lot of challenges. And in order to understand your enemies, you have to study. You have to study your enemies. Just like in the old days, we just didn't go out and hunt buffalo. We had to understand. That's why I say we have people that understood the climates because they could understand what was coming or what wasn't coming. They could understand the signs. They knew the science of it, if you will. And so we had to understand the enemy and to defeat the enemy. And I'm challenging young kids, especially today, to do that. Your enemies are many, folks. We know enemies. One of my biggest enemies was academics. I didn't like school. And yet I started reading about all these different people that were in our state long before America came in, if you will, white America. I learned all about our ancestors. I learned about our so-called chiefs, if you will, of our leaders, our managers. And I learned that what they did is they understood their enemies. And I always go back to that because, again, I believe that when you're going to school right now, sometimes we don't worry about math, we don't worry about science, we don't worry about English, we don't worry about all this history. And if that defeats you, that means that your enemy is defeating you. And we can't afford that nowadays. We have to run our own lives. North Dakota is a very good example. What we're doing right here today is a very good example of how those doors can be opened for you. You're the only ones that can stop yourselves from going through those doors. And when it comes to North Dakota, we've come a long way. We have historic sites all over this backbone that we call the Missouri River. From the state sites to the National Park Service sites, even county sites and so forth that tell our history. And so when we look at this proclamation, it gives us an opportunity to start working even more with this place that we call the state of North Dakota. So I challenge you young people that are here to get involved, not just in school, but start getting involved in community organizations. That seems like a weird thing for me to say right now, but I would suggest you do that. Start getting involved in going to the management to sit down in their council meetings, to learn how to start running, to learn how to manage our resources. At one time, the Indian people that were here obviously lived on the plains, they lived in the Badlands, they lived along the Missouri River, each existing, forming their relationships, forming their councils, and establishing a way for the family to survive. And again, I think we're at that point again where we are surviving once again. But again, it's through education, it's through community leadership, and it's obviously through our faith that we will continue. It's like any place else. A place can't run by itself. A place can't run by one leader. If we look at North Dakota, we look at a community. I really do. We look at a community that will build us to survive. As we learned from the villages back in the days when our people lived in those villages, it takes all of them to survive, not just one person. So I guess with a proclamation, it also invites us to get together. It invites us to understand who we are, first of all, as human beings, second of all, as North Dakota citizens. That with all of us get together, with all of our power, with all of our knowledge, with all of our spirituality, we can continue to make this the best state in the Union. And we can continue to open those doors for American Indian students, if you will, which means that the only ones that can stop you are you. So we look at the proclamation. I want to thank North Dakota. I want to thank the leaders of North Dakota that came up with the First Nations Day. I'm hoping that every nation in the United States will take that example and start honoring our Indian people the way they should be honored. We have a lot of elders out there that have seen a lot of changes. We have gone from a time when we were almost at a standstill to a time now that nothing can hold us back. I encourage, again, the youth to get more involved in the state. And when I say youth, I'm talking all youth, American Indian and non-Indian youth. Take advantage of the opportunity that this great proclamation has given to North Dakota. The theme of this is contemporary Native America. In contemporary Native America, we have more leaders now than ever before in the state of North Dakota who are American Indian. And again, I'm going to go back to challenging these young people that are here today. Don't let anything stop you. In my experience, in my humble experience, I should say, in the National Park System, there's been times, as Scott said, when it was easy to turn back. When I got those calls at Little Bighorn Battlefield that cussed me up because I had Indian populations there and people there and said we were going to get rid of you and your family, it would have been easy to stop and run away. But I come from a very strong family, extended family on both sides. And my family, like your family, I'm sure, has told me never to run, to be that warrior, to conquer. But again, in order to do that, you have to understand your enemies. You have to put a goal for yourself. Stick a goal in your head that you can accomplish. And again, get involved with the state. Get involved with this beautiful state. This is such a great state. I do a lot of programs now around the country. And people always say they want to come to North Dakota. And I say, go. It's a great state. So when you get an opportunity, I'd like to have young people especially thank the governor and thank his staff for this great day, for the First Nations Day. And again, understand that with these opportunities, we can forge ahead and be the great state we always were. And in the future, maybe in 20 years, maybe even next year, we can have more and more American Indian students who are graduating from high school go to colleges and complete that college, therefore conquering that set of enemies, if you will, to go on and be the leaders that you are. So again, I want to thank the governor. I want to thank Scott Davis. I want to thank you for coming here. And last thing I want to say is that I know we have only one day, First Nations Day. But as far as I'm concerned, First Nations Day for us is every day. It's not just one day that we can recognize, and I appreciate the governor and the state of North Dakota doing that. But folks, every day is First Nations Day. Every day is American Indian Month, if you will. Because we're the leaders of tomorrow. The ones that are sitting here. The ones that are home. And by all means, I ask everybody in this room to daily say prayers for our people. I'm not just saying India, all of our human beings, the ones that are fighting our wars right now, the ones that will fight them in the future. Say prayers that we can continue to lead that we can have the peace in this world that I think that we deserve. And I also ask people to pray for the understanding of people when it comes to the history. Don't hide the history. As I heard a long time ago by some of the grandfathers, my clan grandfathers told me, he said, I'll say, yes, you can look back to understand what happened, to understand the mistakes that we might have made. Always look back to that, but don't go there. But utilize that for the future, so that in the future, we can be the leaders we were of yesterday. Oh, mazagiras.
That was Gerard Baker during the 2011 observance of North Dakota First Nations Day, held in the Great Hall of the State Capitol Building in Bismarck. His message to Native youth to become the leaders of tomorrow was encouragement well taken by this next presenter. Devereaux Yellow Earring became a leader in student government at United Tribes Technical College, serving two terms as student senate president and a leader on the Thunderbirds basketball team. Yellow Earring was one of several North Dakota Tribal College students featured as First Nations Day keynote speakers in 2012.
I'm honored to be a part of this First Nations Day, but also honored because I'm going to share a story with you all today. It's a story about my life, and it's titled A Second Chance at Life. It all began the summer before my fourth birthday. I was 3 years old. My family, my mother and my family, my fellow siblings were at a rummage sale getting some clothes for us. Me and my two older brothers, who are 5 and 6 at the time, were chasing some puppies around the parking lot and stuff. And I had my younger brother with me who wasn't able to walk yet. So I was trying to, you know, I was trying to hang in there. I was 3 years old. I was trying to hang in there with my older brothers and, you know, chase these puppies around. And I just happened, you know, I couldn't keep up with them. So I just happened to, you know, just sit down. You know, I wanted to take a break. And I just happened to sit down behind this little old lady who was in a pickup truck. And she was getting ready to leave from the rummage sale. And that's when it happened. She backed over me and I got ran over by her pickup truck. And I was 3 years old at that time. My mom seen what happened. So my mom came and she was screaming. She was screaming at that lady that backed over me. And then the lady didn't know what happened, so she pulled back in, and she went over me twice. And so I was life-flighted to the Rapid City Regional Hospital. They saved me. They saved my life. My lungs collapsed, but surgeons and the people at the Rapid City Regional Hospital saved me. And I was just a three-year-old boy. That's my story about, you know, getting my second chance at life. So I just wanted to share that with you guys. I'm blessed to be here today because, you know, I got a second chance, and I know I'm trying to make the most of it. My name is Devereaux Yellow Earring. I'm a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, a third-year business administration student, and also this will be my second term as the elected student body president at United Tribes Technical College, and also part of the basketball team as well. I played 2 years under the National Junior College Association. But this year's theme that they came up with, exercising self-sovereignty, I'm the kind of guy who has to, you know, break things down, you know, word by word, just to get a better understanding of it. I broke down the first word with exercising. You know, I'm pretty sure we all know what exercising is, you know, keeping your health good and going out and just doing, you know, just a few minutes of exercise. So, you know, exercise, I can exercise, you know, I'm a student athlete, I can understand that. And self, you know, talking about, you know, myself, I'm pretty sure I can do that. I like to brag, but no. And sovereignty. Now, sovereignty was, you know, just a difficult word for me to understand. You know, I did my research, thank God for Google. Sovereignty, you know, I just summarized it into my own definition of what I, you know, what I've come to understand what sovereignty means. And the definition of sovereignty to me is the ability to govern oneself. That's my definition of sovereignty. So I just broke those three words down to come up with about the theme this year. So, you know, just to get a better understanding of that. And also the questions that were asked, they wanted me to, you know, tell about how I exercised my sovereignty in these different areas of my life. So first of all, I'd like to start with my health. I've been facing some health problems the past few years. You know, being a student athlete, you know, you have to go to basketball practice every day. You got to go to class. It's really strenuous on your body. And I've been battling through a back problem. I have a bulging disc in my back, and it's affecting me a little bit. But, you know, I'm still able to carry on my day-to-day activities. But also I see, you know, health back home in my communities or even with my friends, because I know that the Native American people have are constantly battling with diabetes and high blood pressure and things like that. You know, I can see that. And so I want to prove to our people that, you know, you can have a healthy lifestyle and you can be healthy by, you know, just going out there and exercising and doing different things like that, eating right, eating your diet. Now I'm an athlete, so you guys, I don't know if you guys all heard of an athlete's metabolism. You know, I can eat and eat and eat, and my metabolism is really high. But as I'm getting older, you know, I can feel it slowing down. So now I gotta watch what I eat now. So I feel it catching up. So, and then next I would talk about my education, exercising my sovereignty in education. At United Tribes Technical College, you know, I'm the elected student body president, and you know that's all I need as motivation right there. You know, I just want to prove in the classroom and set a good example for my classmates and, you know, try to do the best I can all the time. Always have a smile on my face and, you know, show people, give them good vibes, give them good intentions. And that's what I try to do with my education. And my family, how do I exercise self-sovereignty with my family? I have a wife and I have a 3-year-old daughter. And I do the best job I can in, you know, keeping us together, doing activities, and showing them that, you know, that we are happy. You know, I'm happy where I am in my life today, and I try to, you know, bring that to my family and also to my family back home, because I have something to prove to them as well. I only have one person in my family who graduated. She is a certified nurse practitioner. She is my auntie, and then I will be the second year, second generation of a graduate in my family. So I'm a second generation graduate. And so to my family and to my younger, you know, my younger relatives, I just want to prove to them that, you know, it's possible. It's possible to go out there and, you know, get your education and, you know, just set a good example for my family back home as well. So that's how I'm going to exercise my self-sovereignty to my family. And my employment, I work on the LTE program, Leadership Through Experience program at United Tribes Technical College. I've actually worked in the Strengthening Lifestyles Department. I see Marcus Austin is the director of that. I worked with him the past 2 years, and it's really... You know, with my back problem, there's you know, some labor work that has to be done, but I still, you know, I try to do the best job I can, you know, to show up to work on time, you know, set a good example for my coworkers, you know, give them some leadership, give them some pointers, you know, just talk to them, you know, building better relationships with my coworkers, and you know, that's how I do my exercise my sovereignty with my coworkers and my employment. So next, I want to move on to the other questions that were asked about, you know, exercising your sovereignty in your community, your neighborhoods. At United Tribes Technical College, the community is family-based. We have 3 daycare centers there, so there's a lot of children who are actively on campus. Also, there's a kindergarten through 8th grade elementary school on campus, so I know that there are young people out there who are looking up to us, and I try to do the best job I can in giving them, you know, good vibes, giving them good examples, showing them, you know, asking them to be involved and be a part of any activities that's going on campus. So that's, you know, I am a firm believer of leading by example. You know, actions speak louder than words. So with all the children and the younger people on campus, you know, they're going to look up to you. And going back to me being a student athlete, they are looking up to me. I see all these, you know, going to my basketball games, getting ready to warm up, and you see all these young kids running up to me, you know, are you ready to play? I want to see you dunk it, you know, things like that. You know, I like that, you know, because they're looking up to me, and I need to uphold myself. And my second year on the basketball team, I was elected as the captain. There was 2 captains that were selected for my sophomore year. It was myself and my friend Todd Rainingbird, who is from the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. We were complete opposites. He was the kind of guy who was more vocal, who was getting on the guys, you know, pushing them. And I was, you know, just a quiet guy because, you know, like I said, you know, I want to lead by example. I don't have to holler at my teammates, you know, to get them going. I will show them, you know, I will show them. I will work hard in practice. I'll be there early. I'll put in extra time. And that's what I tried to do, you know. And, you know, it really worked out good for us because they had, you know, they seen both aspects of leadership. You know, the people who are going to push them and talk to them and tell them what to do. Then they also seen the side where they can just look and, you know, watch and learn. So with that, like I said, I am a firm believer of leading by example. My actions speak louder than my words, and I'm going to do the best job that I can, you know, no matter what, you know, what my journey, where my journey takes me, I will do my best. And I would just like to close by, you know, sharing a piece of advice that we received from the president of our school. He told us that in order to be a good leader, you have to take care of yourself first. Make sure you have yourself, you know, in order. Make sure you have everything taken care of for yourself before you step into your leadership role. And that's how you're going to be an effective leader. And that's how I exercise my self-sovereignty. Thank you.
That was Devereaux Yellow Earring, a United Tribes student from the Cheyenne River Tribe who earned a bachelor's degree in business administration in 2014. Telling his inspiring story provided North Dakotans with a personal view of the challenges for Native people and the optimism needed for success. It was part of First Nations Day, a day in October each year to recognize, learn about, and honor Indigenous people. This special events edition of United Tribes News Radio was produced by the Office of Public Information at United Tribes Technical College. United Tribes is a diverse campus community providing post-secondary education and training for Native students and students of all ethnic backgrounds. Learn more about United Tribes at our website, uttc.edu, and on Facebook, United Tribes Technical College. Leadership begins here.